Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some pretty good news. Again, I'm happy that the infrastructure bill has passed. Now, how do we take that money, get it out the door, and start rebuilding America? And as I've been saying, look, from this moment forward, I'm hoping every politician, every voter finds a picket line, adopts a striker, and gets a master's class in working class economics and talk about how do we rebuild our small communities, our rural areas, how do we rebuild manufacturing, and, well, rebuild our country. And here to share some thoughts on how we get to that point and where we need to go from here, I've asked David Pepper to come talk with us. David's a former Ohio Democratic Party chair. He's also the author of Laboratories of Autocracy, a wake-up call from behind the lines. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So this is, you know, I've been saying this is, you know, in Biden's words, a BFD. This is a big deal. Yeah. While I don't think it's enough, I think it's still a big deal.
Yeah. No, it is a big deal. I mean, if you think about it in terms of these communities, it's, you know, this is the opposite of trickle-down economics. We finally get to show what it means to invest and that it can actually make a difference. And I think the reason this never got done under Trump was at the end of the day, Mitch McConnell and these others, they don't want people to see that robust investment can actually lift places that haven't seen a break in a long time. So it's an opportunity in that way. It's an opportunity to make a difference in all these communities. And I think it's an opportunity for good candidates and office holders, but also candidates who will be running in tougher districts to actually now have something to run on as opposed to just running against.
Yeah.
And I think if the administration does its job well, and the DNC, where they're really, you know, they're putting the administrative officials at work all over the country. And whether you're a state house candidate or a congressional candidate, even in a tough district, you now have something to say, hey, we're about this. We're not only about what they say we're about, we're gonna help build this Main Street back, build a flood wall in this community. And we just haven't had that for a long time.
Too long. And look,
And in some ways it's more tangible than even the Affordable Care Act was. I mean, one thing I always say is Obama won Ohio in 12 because of the auto rescue. All around the state, towns that built auto parts and autos knew that he had done something to help them. This is like that if we do it right.
If we do it right, and that's the thing. Now, Trump evidently went ballistic today on Mitch McConnell, ripped into him for allowing this to happen and supporting this and actually voting for it. And am I the only one who remembers that there was a $2 trillion plan back in 19 that Trump himself, you know, basically tanked just despite the Democrats? He could have had this win.
Yeah.
I guarantee there would have been more than 13 Democrats who voted for
totally.
This.
Totally. I mean, I was seeing the same thing. I don't remember all the timing. It's amazing that he had 4 years, and the first two he had everything he needed in terms of the House and the Senate. You know, if it had been done at all close to right, Democrats would have voted for it. You know, we're not playing the games they are. Now, that's why I was saying, at the end of the day, you got to ask yourself, how are they unable to do it? I think one, big investments like this scare them because it's a democratic model of governing that they want to not happen because it actually works. And B, and someone else, I think one of the columnists pointed this out, but it's also true, they were unable to do almost anything without a corrupt or privatization element. So rather than just a robust investment, there was always some deal for somebody. There was always some investor that was going to pocket something. And I think they couldn't help themselves, even as on something as basic as this, without really corrupting it up in a way that made it much more complicated. So it is incredible that for 4 years, and someone asked me this the other day, I think it's true, if Trump does run again, and I have mixed feelings, I actually think there could be better, you know, more formidable opponents than Trump, by the way, in 24.
I agree.
But talk about a clear contrast between Biden and Trump. Trump had 4 years, never got any of it done for anybody, anywhere. Joe Biden, his first year, despite, you know, a very narrow margin, got it done across party lines. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, a clear contrast and who was successful. I think that's why Donald Trump's lashing out today. It's a really bad contrast for him.
No, it absolutely is. And I think you're right. I think in another year or two, especially after the stuff that keeps coming out, I think Trump will be a little battered. But I still don't want him to run in 2024.
Yeah, no, I don't either. You don't want to wish for that. But I think that if he were, like, this is a bad moment for him. He knows it. He can't even help himself. But now he's trying to blame McConnell for his own failures.
You know, this is a moment where, again, the idea of shovel-ready projects. How many shovel-ready projects do we have to get out the door, to start getting things done, so people actually see the work being done? It's one thing to have the signing ceremony and say, hey, there's money coming. It's a whole nother thing for people to actually see the actual work being done, the jobs being created, the lives being better, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is the point I've been trying to make for some time. You got to really be intentional and explicit that this is going to a lot of these places that don't think it's going to them. You know, in Ohio, what's the famous bridge is falling apart down the street from me, Brent Spence Bridge, massive project. Small towns are thinking, well, this is for that bridge. And, you know, I hope it is. This bridge needs something. But they don't think it's for their town. They think it's for somewhere else. And unless you really, I think, bend over backwards to say, there are projects near you that you will see and then do it. So they see it, they'll just assume it's for somewhere else and they won't, frankly, vote based upon it. So I think this is where, you know, Tom Vilsack, Pete Buttigieg, Granholm, Marsha Fudge, who's from Ohio, I think all of them need to really be thinking through the breadth of this, where it goes, and again, be very explicit and intentional. And the other thing I would do is, sometimes I think at the highest levels of politics, people just think like a speech is addressing something. Oh, we gave a speech on that. Go walk these towns. Don't call everyone together for a speech. Maybe it's some, get out of the car if you can, security wise, walk the street. Feel the dilapidation in these places. You can't help but get pissed off, pardon my French. It's terrible. They're dying. Go feel it, go see it, and have in a year or two, the hope is shown that something came through the town and fixed it. And sometimes, again, I think like, whether you give a speech and you think you covered it, go to the places, walk the town, see the decay, and then come back later when the work's being done, talk to the workers, and come back after that when the main street looks a lot better. I think it's got to be a much more sort of bottoms up approach to this messaging than just showing up and give speeches to big groups.
No, I mean, it's old school retail politics. I mean, it's being part of the community. It's how it's supposed to work, which is why I've been saying in this moment, if you're a Democratic politician, you're a Democratic voter, you know, I don't care where on the spectrum, you need to find a picket line. You need to get out and talk to those striking workers and find out why they're there. Find out the issues that are affecting their lives. Take the master's class on working class economics and then do something to make their lives better and other working people's lives better. The video that you shot in Manchester, Ohio was an incredibly important moment because there's a Manchester, Ohio in every single state, probably in every county in this country,
absolutely,
that we could be making lives better if you use this bill properly.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny. So I tweeted that out. And then after the infrastructure vote, I said, I tweeted that out and said, tweet out the name of a town and a congressman who just voted against infrastructure. And I showed my video. People were like, oh, we got towns like that all over Iowa, Indiana, Texas, New York. You know, these towns are everywhere. They have been left out. You know, Democrats don't lean enough to say, we're trying to help you too. Of course, we got to help our big cities. They need help too, but we don't intentionally tell these folks, you're dealt in as well. And Republicans are so gerrymandered in these areas, they look past them too. They're voting against the interests of these towns, just like they did last week on the infrastructure bill. Yeah. And I think there needs to be a lot more of that. But it's you know, I have a Ford F-150. It's driving your Ford F-150 to these places, getting out, walking down the street. And if you're not pissed off by the shape of these places, then you just shouldn't be doing this. And I think this is one reason I think Joe Biden would be so strong. No, he's got empathy just oozing through him.
Absolutely.
If he got out and walked Manchester.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
He'd be livid by the shape these places have been left in by trickle-down economics. They need this infrastructure boost as much as any place in America.
I'm right there with you. But, you know, I look at, you know, now we're starting to see reports coming out evaluating last Tuesday. We're starting to see the reports coming out. Oh, well, you know, we need to do something about rural America. Every Democratic county chairperson in rural America is saying the same thing. I've been telling you for years. We know what the answer is.
Yeah.
And the answer is we've got to get into these places, fight the fights, and then take the investment and make things happen. And there's a new report out by this Richard Martin guy for the American Family Voices Group titled Factory Town, where he goes through all of the states that you listed, you know, Iowa, Indiana, Pennsylvania, Ohio, all of those in Midwest industrial states that have just been decimated by bad trade deals and horrible policy. And he's saying the same thing. We've got to invest and fight in those areas. This is we're not Magellan discovering anything, David.
Yeah.
We just got to do it.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You know, sometimes you hear, well, you can't do that because you got to do this. You know, in a place like Ohio, you got to do it all. You're not going to win. And here's the truth. It's the same message. These towns that are going to clearly lean Republican, they need the same inputs and the same policies as your large cities that are Democrats. It's not like you're going to these towns and saying something different than you are to the parts of Cincinnati that need improvement. So we don't have to sort of choose one over the other. We just got to go to both places. You know, the sooner we do that, the better. But I do agree that, that you know, it's been pretty clear for a while. But what we, and if we don't, and this is what's happening. If we don't do this, then all we do is play defense on all the issues they bring up in these places, which have nothing to do with economics. And here's the other point. Am I saying we have to do this because we're going to win 50% of the vote in those? No, but we cannot lose. You do it because it's the right thing, first and foremost. But if you go out and make the economic argument to lift these places and you say trickle down isn't working, right? Well, let's bring some infrastructure in. At least you arguably can get back to the high 30s or 40s that Obama was in these places. Obama got to 40% in most of rural Ohio, probably felt bad losing 60-40. You get to 40%, you're winning these states.
Right.
So you're not going to win everyone over. Some are still not going to like other cultural issues or the wall. But if you're making and this is Sherrod Brown's politics, hopefully Tim Ryan's, if you're making an economic argument, you're getting people to think, oh, yeah, I may not even agree with that guy on all those things, but man, he really lifted my town. So I'm going to give him a vote. And that's how you get yourself into the high 30s and 40s, which means you have a chance to win Ohio and you win Virginia and you win a lot of other places. If you're mired in the 20s, game over. Yeah. I don't care how well you do in your big cities. There's not enough vote to make up for losses of the type we've been seeing in rural Ohio when we simply don't do anything there.
Now, you brought up the cultural stuff, and I've had a lot of people going, well, you know, this moment right now, Democrats are talking about abandoning the culture issues, and I'm in the position, I'm not abandoning them. I'm finding places where we can find common ground. And I think the economy is a place where, you know, you go back to, you know, the Clinton years, and look, I was not a huge Clinton fan, but it was the economy, stupid. That's where we start. If we can start with wanting to build a better economy for every working person, where people have decent wages, decent benefits, a decent opportunity, and shot at a future, that is a great starting point to then begin conversations around everything else, which is why I'm on this adopt a striker kick. Get out there, find common ground, walk shoulder to shoulder with that striking worker, and figure out how you come to some kind of consensus.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll mention Sherrod. I've run statewide a couple times. I have met so many voters who've said the same thing about Sherrod. I don't agree with him, including Republicans. Oh, I don't agree with that guy on everything, but he's fighting for me. I can feel it. He gets my vote. Like, in once they know your core, if your core is good jobs, collective bargaining, pensions, wages going up, you're helping their struggling town. If they know that's who you are at your core, the other stuff is secondary. Not for everybody, but for enough people to win. If they don't know that that's your core, then all that other stuff gets so thrown at them that you just lost the vote. So they've got to know that at your gut level, you're fighting for them. They got to feel it on those economic bread and butter issues. And that puts you in the game to frankly win that vote over. And that's been why some candidates are able to succeed here,
yeah.
even if on some issues, so those people don't agree with them.
Yeah.
But if you don't give them that core to stand on, you have nothing.
Exactly. But I look at this, the current Republican Party right now is lost their mind. I mean, the fact that, yesterday you had, a congressman, come up with a cartoon fantasizing about killing the president and another member of Congress while the party is talking about throwing out the 13 people off their committee assignments who had the audacity to vote for this infrastructure bill is just maddening.
It is. It is. I think it's hard. We lose sight of it. And I'll just give an example. And again, this is going to be counter to what a lot of the story is. We had a lot. I mean, I have two kids. We were talking before this show. My kids don't think twice about wearing a mask at school. They don't even think about it. And last week, all around the state, we had this whole right-wing orchestrated school board, attack that all these people were running to get rid of mask mandates, not just in blue areas, but in red areas, suburbs. The anti-mask candidates got crushed. Now, they won in a few places. But for the most part, I think voters were saying, we're tired of people yelling at these meetings. We're tired of school board members being threatened. We don't mind that our kids are wearing masks, at least 70% of us don't. Keep your extremist politics out of our local school boards. And they literally sent it out and found these people and in a way that shocked me because I thought they were all going to win. Most of them actually lost. And I think that even that shows how extreme the party's gotten. Like this hardcore anti-mask stuff is actually where about 25 to 30% of this country is. And everyone else is like, can we just get through this pandemic and keep our kids safe, please?
And get to something better.
That silent majority, again, not just blue parts of Ohio, but red parts near Youngstown, near Northeast Ohio, red suburbs or swing. They all voted against, not all, but most of these candidates with all the money they had and nasty mailers. They just lost because I think there's a silent majority who's like, this stuff's crazy. Maybe you're going to have it in Congress, maybe the State House. Keep it away from our schools.
I'm right there with you. David, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Hope people check out the book, Laboratories of Autocracy, A Wake-Up Call from Behind the Lines, written by David Pepper. David, again, thanks so much. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
Good stuff. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.